Hi, I'm Michael Senoff, founder and CEO of HardToFindSeminars.com. For the last 5 years, I've interviewed the world's best business and marketing minds. Along the way, I've created a successful publishing business all from home from my two-car garage. Now my challenge is to build the world's largest free resource for online, downloadable MP3 audio business interviews. I knew I needed a site that contained strategies, solutions, and inside angles to help you live better, to save and make more money, to stay healthier, and to get more out of life. I've learned a lot in the last 5 years, and today I'm going to show you the skills you need to survive.
First off, I never wanted to invent anything. I've always been an entrepreneur. I've actually reconnected with my fourth grade teacher, and I remember this, and I remember going home and telling my mom all about it, but in the fourth grade, I was her teacher assistant, and I had to go to the copy machine and make copies. You had to lay them out, or say the packet was 8 pages long. You had to make 26 copies of the 8 pages, lay them out in individual piles, and then staple them. And I remember thinking and inventing in my head and even conversing with my teacher, yeah, I think we should make this copy machine that you can just put the whole packet in there, it copies all of them, and it staples it for you. Little did I know, it wasn't until I got my first big girl job in the early 2000s that I had seen this copy machine actually being made. You could just throw in a packet, and it would double-side it, it would staple it, it would do all these things. And so I went back to my mom, and I'm like, Mom, we could have been millionaires a long time ago. You would have listened to me about this copy machine.
Well, absolutely. Everyone has those moments where they say, I wish they had this, or I wish someone would invent this. And then later on, they see their invention or their idea already done, and they say, God, I could have been the one who had done that. There's not a person, I think, alive here in America who hasn't had that similar experience.
My point behind it was, I think, either born with it or not, because I have people who work for me who come to work, they're told what to do, and they do it, and they execute it beautifully, and then they go home. I have a girl that works in my office that I've known since we were in seventh grade, and she was that academic person who did all of her homework, did all of her classwork, did all of her projects. I, on the other hand, barely did homework, hated to do projects. I was constantly doodling when it was time to write notes. As adults, I go back and I look at those academia people who are now nurses or teachers or working in offices as secretaries or paper people. And then I look at all this, like, F-ups, and we're all the business owners. We own restaurants and corporations and construction companies.
Do you have children?
I do. My first child was born in 2007, which is Spirit Fingers. My second child was born in 2008, 11 days after I received my first 5,000 pair of Spirit Fingers from China. And my third child was born in 2009, they're 13 months apart. So I launched Spirit Fingers and had two babies, all within about 24 months of each other.
Boy, that's a lot going on. So why don't you tell me your name and where you're located and when the idea of Spirit Fingers popped into your head and how that occurred.
My name is Teresa Denham. I live in Virginia Beach, and our corporate office is also in Virginia Beach, Virginia. The idea of the invention, which according to the patent is pom-poms attached to the fingertip of each finger, also known as Spirit Fingers. I'd say around 2005, I was going to a game. I personally had never been to college and never been to a professional game or a college football game. So I thought to myself, A, I'm never going to go back to a Virginia Tech football game. So I don't want to spend my money on the sweatshirt or the t-shirt or cap or licensed product. So I'll just make something. I'll wear the colors, but I'll make something Virginia Techy. So these little pom-poms that are attached to what we now know as Spirit Fingers, I went to Walmart, got maroon and orange, which are Virginia Tech's colors, made these little pom-poms.
Did you know you were going to put them onto the fingers of the gloves?
I did, because at Walmart, all they had were like purple, black, teal, all these crazy colors. They didn't have white, orange, or maroon, which was what I was looking for. So I called my friend that I was going to the game with, and I said, do you have a pair of white gloves? She said, yeah, sure. When I got to her house, I attached the pom-poms to the gloves. First of all, I'm not a knitter or a crafter like that, so I didn't even really know how to attach them. And I Googled how to attach yarn to material. Long story short, it took one little thread with a knitting needle, and boom, I had my gloves. I go to the game. It's kind of cold. It's November. It's a night game, so as the sun is going down, I break out with my gloves, and everyone loved them. and said, oh, my gosh, what is that? And, of course, I've had some drinks at that point. Yeah. And so I'm like, they're spirit fingers, and kind of did the little spirit finger move. And then it was kind of born. And I remember on the ride home the next day, because of the reception I got at the game, I thought, because I am an entrepreneur, I've had several businesses that failed pre this game. Not failed, but they just didn't do what I wanted them to do. I thought, I think I might be able to patent this. So I remember having the conversation with my friends, and they said, oh, no, you can't patent that. Sure, that exists already. I go home. Mind you, I've lost one of the pair. So we have this conversation. They say, no, it's probably not patentable. So I have this one.
Who are you talking to about the patent again?
My friends, Jim and Susie Davis. So I remember thinking the whole ride home about this idea of this business. Because, again, in my mind, I'm still an entrepreneur, and I'm thinking all these big dreams. I go home, back to reality. This one glove continues to populate in my life for a good year.
What do you mean, populate?
I would find it under the bed, and then, you know, a couple weeks later, I'd find it in the closet. A couple weeks later, I'd find it in the dish drainer. It just kept showing up, and I couldn't ever get rid of it. I wouldn't just throw it away. God was saying, this is what you're going to do. Just listen to me, and you will get there. Finally, I said to my husband, I think I've got something here. I've Google searched pom-poms attached to a glove, spirit fingers, all of these terms. I can't find anything, not even how to make these little pom-poms online. There weren't all these websites that were showing you how to do things. I said, I'm going to speak to a patent attorney and find out what the process is. Started that in August of 2007. And by December, I had the first step in the patenting process is your patent search. Now, with a patent search, you pay a minimal amount. The lawyer puts together all of the concepts of your quote-unquote invention and then sends it out. And based on the concepts, you get all of these other patents that could either discourage you from applying for a patent, or there's a term in the patenting process that is similar to a prior invention.
Yeah, you had to confirm that your idea was absolutely unique and novel, and that no one had the idea before you, or it could have been unpatentable.
Right. Like the people who invented the hula hoop, they basically invented a circle, and a circle exists. But because you are using it as a toy, it's now a new type of circle.
So when the patent search references came back, was there anything that could have...
So what?
What was it?
There was pom-poms. There was a cat toy that used balls at the end of a glove. There was a dusting mitt that didn't have pom-poms, but they had attachments on the glove used for dusting.
Right, so based on that, what did your patent attorney recommend you do? Go ahead and file?
They don't recommend either way. They say, this is what we provide you from a legal standpoint. We can't decide for you whether or not you should go through with it. They would not make a recommendation either way.
All right, so you had to decide to either go for it or not, and you went for it.
I had to come up with $5,000 for the retainer, process the patent, filed for the patent, and just became patent pending at that point.
At that point, did you move forward on the patent pending, or did you want to wait until you had the patent?
I filed December 2007, and I continued with my process of finding a manufacturer who could produce it, find retailers who would buy it, because, again, even if you have a great invention, if no one wants to buy it, then your invention is only as good as an idea. So I started finding manufacturers overseas, getting quotes, getting pricing. You know, with my particular product, it was a knit. I had to get into the licensing aspect, finding out the minimums from China. It was going to be 10,000 pairs. So I thought, well, who's going to be my best customer? Who can I sell 10,000 pair to? And I thought, well, Virginia Tech, naturally. That was where I invented the product, and they have a ton of fans. I'm in Virginia. There's a ton of Virginia Tech licensed product in all the retailers locally, so that's where I will start. My first appointment was with a Virginia Tech bookstore. I walked in with a homemade pair of spirit finger gloves and a Ziploc baggie. I simply wanted to know, is this something you would buy? If I could make this product, package it, and make it look like a real product, would you buy it? She bought 288 pair right then. I didn't even have a pen or paper, and I asked the buyer for the bookstore, can I borrow a pen and a piece of paper? She said, sure. So I wrote down 288 pair, and I remember asking her, well, would you like the little VT logo on it? And she said, yeah. And she said, well, you're going to have to go down to licensing to get that, though. His name is Locke White. He's in building 212. Take a right when you leave the parking lot, and it's the first building on the left.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. Did you know what licensing was at that time?
No. I leave there, and I naturally go to this building she tells me about. I ask for Locke White. I sit down. I said, here's my idea. And the bookstore just bought 288 pair of them. He's sitting at his desk, and he's looking at it. flipping it over, put it on, and he said, Teresa, I've been doing licensing for Virginia Tech for 19 years, and I have never seen a product that would sell without licensing before. I don't think you need licensing, but if you want it, I will give you the licensing. I need you to submit the application fee. It's $50, but absolutely you can have Virginia Tech licensing.
Explain what a smart move that was to take the licensing compared to not taking the licensing.
As any good brand, people like their branded products. So whether it be an Under Armour shirt or Tom's shoes or Reef flip-flops, you want Virginia Tech, whatever college you went to or whatever NFL team you went to, you really want that logo on your apparel. Hindsight 2020, should I have done it without the logo? Absolutely not. I wouldn't have changed any of that. The licensing created a whole new process of this invention. Now, in order to receive licensing, you had to not only pay the application fee, but you had to obtain insurance, liability protection, in the amount of $1 million.
So what were you going to have to pay to this school?
I had to pay the $50 application fee and what they call advanced royalties. Their royalty rate, Virginia Tech, is 8%. So as an advance, I had to pay $50. That basically said, in order to make back your $50 of advanced royalties, you have to sell about $450 worth of product.
What do they require from you?
You have to submit a quarterly report to them. You just submit how many sold per quarter.
Did you sign a contract?
No, the application is good for 1 year.
Did you have some kind of exclusivity?
I don't think anyone really knew what to do with this. And sometimes, even today, 5 years later, with all of the licensing agreements we have, some people call it apparel because of the gloves. Some people call it accessory because of the novelty of the gloves. Some people call it a novelty item. And these are all three separate categories when you get into the big licensing corporations like the NFL and NHL.
I know you have some exclusivity with your patent currently, but let's say you didn't have the patent. Anyone could come knock you off, go get licensing for the same product and compete if they wanted to.
At that patent pending status, it doesn't prevent anyone else from going to market with the same product. But the moment that you are awarded a patent as the proprietary owner, you can then go after that other company.
So how did you hear the news that you were awarded the patent? From your attorney?
It was, of course, through the attorney, and obviously it was followed up in the mail. And it's really funny, so many major milestones happen when you're launching an invention and a company kind of simultaneous. It's not like I was a company going through all the growth and fulfillment of having a company, but I was also creating a whole new product that had never existed on the market. For me, there's so many major milestones that happen. Some of the details from the invention have gotten lost in the actual business.
During those 2 years, were you full on doing the marketing and growing the business, or were you kind of sitting back until you knew you had the patent?
I filed for the patent in 2007, in December. I incorporated Spirit Fingers, Inc. in May of 2008. I made my first public sale at Virginia Tech Bookstore in September of 2008. By the end of 2008, in December, I was entering into my first licensing contract with a company who was licensing my trademark and, at that point, my patent pending status. It wasn't even a patented product, and they were asking to take on my patent, the pom-poms attached to a glove, and the trademark Spirit Fingers.
What kind of company was this?
They were a knit-based company. They had distribution at a large majority of the colleges for beanies, scarves, ball caps. They were a company out of California by the name of Merge Left.
Did you approach them, or did they approach you?
After September and October of 2008, I had at that point brought on 50 retailers.
Was everything being made out of China, or were you making in the U.S.?
It was being made out of China, and actually the only thing I had was 5,000 pair. I had 2,500 maroon gloves with orange and maroon pom-poms, and 2,500 orange gloves with orange and maroon pom-poms, and both of them had the VT logo on them. So I would simply call a local retailer, like a Hallmark or a gift store or something like that, and say, hi, my name is Teresa. Funny as it sounds, I've invented this product. It's called Spirit Fingers. They're $6. My minimum is 12 pair. Yeah, would you like me to come by and show them to you, and or would you like to buy some? I would say about 90% of the 100 people I called said yes.
What were you able to get them manufactured for?
Back then, I believe they were $2.40.
Was it one size, or did you do multiple sizes?
Yeah, it's one size fits most at that point. You know, I had to go and buy this magic glove. It naturally fits small-handed people, and then it can stretch to fit larger hands. And I was making it as, like, a female fan wear, and it still is currently one size fits most, although we do have our prototype and a tentative launch date for a youth size.
Was your husband supportive during all this?
100%. I mean, I came to him and said, here's my idea. He said, go for it. I said, I need $10,000 to pay for my product over in China. Go for it. I took my money that was paying for my product down to Walmart and got a MoneyGram, cash. I had to bring cash. Sent all the money over to China. Again, I've never met these people. I've had a very limited relationship with them. It never even occurred to me that I could send this money over there and I could never get the product back. And now that I'm in the big business of business, it didn't even occur to me that that would even happen. After that, I said, this product is coming in. I'm out on maternity leave from my full-time job where I earned $35,000 a year.
Doing what?
I was a career counselor for the Department of Labor. And at that point, I was 23 years old. It was a pretty good job. I didn't have a college education. I had a full-time job, $35,000 a year. I'm out on maternity leave. I just had the baby. And at that point, I said to him, I don't think I'm going to go back. I want to pursue Spirit Fingers full-time. If I don't do it, I'm never going to do it. Again, he supported me. He said, Teresa, I don't think we can afford this. We just had the new baby. He was in the military. He's like, this is how much I make a month. We would be losing this $3,500. If you can make the numbers work, I'm all for it. Again, supported me in quitting the job and pursuing it full time. And then, of course, there's been multiple steps of support since then, but he has never once said, that's a crazy idea.
It's the traditional story you hear. It's almost like an all or nothing. Did you have to borrow money?
Absolutely.
For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. Tell me about that.
Even to pay for the patent search, I borrowed $1,000 from my brother. And then that first $10,000 loan came from my mom, which she instilled some real values. They're hard because now that I'm a mother, you know, you say, okay, honey, here's $10,000. Pay me when you start earning some money. Oh, no, not my mother. She gave it to me in May. And my first payment was due in June. And so I was literally paying back the loan with the loan money.
Did you give up and offer any?
Mm-hmm. She owns 5% of the company, and she'll tell you that that's the investment for her retirement. If I can get back to the licensing agreement that happened at the end of 2008, I launched at Virginia Tech Bookstore in September of 08, and I had all of this product for Virginia Tech. And I thought, if people are receiving it so well at these retailers, what's the second biggest college that I can think of that's pretty local that would buy within driving distance if I had to drive this product around? And it was Ohio State. So I sent in an application for Ohio State University licensing. In that meeting somewhere, there was a sales rep who would send my idea to this company, MergeLeft, out of California. I ended up doing my first patent and trademark licensing agreement with. And this man, John Saferstein, who was the president and founder of MergeLeft, called me in December and said, hey, this is John. I want to add your product to my lineup. I'll give you 8% royalties, and I'll add it to my catalog, and I'll buy all the product, and I'll pay for all the licensing, and you just sit back and collect royalties. And I went to my husband again, and I thought, boy, this couldn't hurt. He's willing to take on the product and submit royalties at 8%. You know, in my head, I'm thinking, what if he does $1 million? I can make $80,000 for not doing anything.
Did he want an exclusive?
Yep, it was an exclusive sales and distribution agreement.
What happened?
I didn't even ask a lot of questions. He called, I think, around December 14th, and by December 28th, we were in the contract. And it was short. It was 3 pages long, and there wasn't a lot of verbiage. I think he probably typed it up on a Microsoft letterhead and sent it to me, and I probably should have had an attorney look at it, but I didn't. I just, again, went out on faith there and made a decision, and it obviously turned out to be the best decision. And we began business January of 2009. Unbeknownst to me at that point, he had a rep group who represented him, but it was only in the college bookstore market, and that was where his focus was in his business. I personally had about 3 sales reps who I had hired from September 2008 through December of 2008. We did about $60,000 worth of Spirit Fingers sales from September to December. And then after coming on board with MergeLeft and finding out that they only had this college bookstore rep group, I said, well, would you mind if I maintain the retail sales rep group? I'll hire my own people. We'll submit our POs to MergeLeft, and you just fulfill it to the retail locations. Gives me 15% of the sales and my 8% royalties. And he said, sure, why not? You know, I can't hurt.
You did that because you thought your salespeople could do a better job than what he was doing?
Well, his salespeople only sold to bookstores. So Virginia Tech bookstore, Ohio State bookstore, Barnes & Noble bookstores, Follett bookstores. We would go to Hallmark and small mom-and-pop retailers. Anything what I now know is a retail market. It could have been as big as Dick's Sporting Goods or as small as James Sportswear in Akron, Ohio.
It worked out well with this guy?
It did. We grew from Virginia Tech only to he brought on 20 blank colors, and he had the, what they call the domestic capabilities to take blank spirit fingers and embroider them here in the U.S. If we had 20 colors, if it were black and red, that black and red could be used for Alabama and Georgia, or a high school could use them as just blank gloves.
When you say blank glove, what color are the gloves?
The blank would be like a black glove with red and black pom-poms. Instead of having to inventory 100 colleges, he would inventory 20 blank colors and slap the logos on them here in the U.S. based on the orders that you receive. So instead of it being a fast food, it would almost be like a fine dining where you place your order and the chef cooks it and then sends it out to your table as opposed to fast food. You walk up to the counter.
And were all the gloves coming from your contact that you originally started with in China?
No, it actually came from their contact in Vietnam because they had a huge business with all their other products. It was better colors. They knew the knit business, they meaning Merge West. And I'll tell you, they taught me more than any college could have ever taught me, and they really helped me.
So what are the three biggest things they taught you?
They taught me the licensing business, they taught me the knit business, and they taught me sales and distribution. They allowed me to come to their trade shows. If I had an idea, they would help facilitate the development of that idea. And then they would tell me when my ideas were, no, we can't do this, and this is why we can't do this. They wouldn't just say, oh, we can't do this. They would say, this is why we can't do it. Or, you know what, that sounds like a great idea. Let's do it.
So how many pairs have you sold since you started the business?
Since we started, we've done $2.6 million.
In gross sales or wholesale?
Because we sell to retailers who then retail them.
How's the business doing now?
Amazing. Since January of 2009, I faced a lot of challenges and roadblocks, if you want to call them, because this contract that I had with Merge Left, well, Merge Left was acquired by another company. So I had to deal with the roadblock. Does this new company want my contract? And are they going to allow me to be a part of this development process and this entrepreneurial process like Merge Left did? Well, of course they did, and they loved it. And they helped get from, at that point, it was about a $350,000 product line to a $950,000 product line. And then that same company got bought out by another company. Now, this bigger company, were they going to honor my contract and my position with Spirit Fingers, being on the development side and the entrepreneurial side? And honestly, they said to me, Teresa, it's not the kind of business that we want to be in, and this is in October of last year. They bought my contract from Imperial, and again, this Merge Left contract expired, so it was time for me to renegotiate. I renegotiated a new contract, and this time, it wasn't just an idea, it was a business. So I was able to negotiate a contract that said, okay, instead of you guys just paying me 8% of whatever you sell, I'm now going to require that you do at least $1 million in sales, and you're going to pay me 10% now, because I now have a patent, and I now have some distribution, and I now have some success stories.
You're listening to an interview on Michael Senoff's Hard-to-Find Seminars. What gave you that confidence, and did someone give you that idea to go back and negotiate and ask for more, even after they had told you that it may not have been their type of business?
Well, that hadn't happened yet. I didn't know anything about the acquisition at that point. I did know that this new company, it's called Imperial Headwear. Now, Merge Left was an $8 million company. Imperial Headwear was a $30 million company. And I was scared of that. I thought, well, I'm going to be a small fish in a big pond. Are they going to give my product enough attention that it wants and needs? And I met several times. They had brought on a new CEO who had a fantastic resume and portfolio of major brands he had run and major companies he had grown. He said, you know, Teresa, I like you. I like your product. We'd like to keep a contract going with you. That's when the negotiations started. No one really suggested these things. I didn't really go to my attorneys. My attorney's $450 an hour. I started doing my own research and reaching out to my network of business owners and asking them, what should I do? How should I do this? What should I ask for? So at the final contract with Imperial, my new licensee of the patent and trademark, I was getting advanced royalties in the amount of 10% of at least $1 million worth of sales. So that's $100,000. In addition, I would still run the rep group in the retail industry. At this point, I have 85 sales reps working for Spirit Fingers, the brand, all over the country. At that point, we had been in Dick's Sporting Goods and Old Navy and Cracker Barrel and airport gift stores, college bookstores, and mom-and-pop shops. And in fact, my sales reps made up 85% of the total revenue. So Merge West college bookstore sales reps, the original group, only accounted for about 15% of our total sales. You know, going back, had I not said, hey, can I keep running this rep group, it could have been a dead product. The next company may have looked at it and said, you know what, we've only done $100,000 for the sales. But because I kept those retail sales reps on, we now had $1 million product line.
How did they do in Old Navy? How many stores did they put them in?
Old Navy, Dick's Sporting Goods, Cracker Barrel, these major corporations, most of them had at least a 93% sell-through. That means you can basically say it was 100% success for them, because that 7% margin becomes returns or defective gloves, damaged goods, you know, maybe someone ripped the tags off of them or ripped the packaging off of them. Everyone, including Old Navy, bought again. All of those sales came through in 2010. By 2011, all of those retailers had bought again. That would be the second year that they carried the product line.
Did they go a third year or not really?
In 2012 is when the acquisition took place from Imperial to another company, Paramount Apparel International. They own licensing rights to like Duck Dynasty, Mossy Oak, MLB, NBA. You know, they have a huge portfolio, but they are in the fashion apparel industry. And that basically means t-shirts, belts, ball caps. They are not in the knit business, but they wanted to buy the licensed product division of Imperial, which again was once Merge Left, if you go back as far as I go. And their president has told me in talks they couldn't buy just a division of Imperial, they had to buy all of Imperial. So by buying all of Imperial, they were able to look at all the different contracts that they had, and they bought my contract. They said, we will honor this contract. It's $1 million product line. We think it has some legs. We'd be willing to take it on. Well, after the acquisition, which happened October 1st, they really got into the nuts and bolts of the business and was able to learn some things that by the naked eye they couldn't really see. And they found out not only did they not want to get into the knit business, they would honor my contract, but they didn't think they would be doing Spirit Fingers product any justice, or me as an entrepreneur. I went back to my network of companies and colleagues, and I found a new company called Windcraft, who I'd had a little bit of a relationship with over the past year at that point. And I went to their CEO, John Hinkle, and I said, look, here's $1 million product line. Here's the guarantees that I require. Here's the royalties I want. Is it something you'd be interested in? He said, absolutely. So from about October 15th, we signed my newest contract April 15th. So with that 6 months, I went through again another contract negotiation to figure out how my new relationship would work. When you look at what I've done by licensing out the patent and trademark, all of these have been a huge business learning curve for me. And I've trusted business, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs don't trust business. I've had a lot of people encourage me and help me for no other reason except out of the goodness of their heart. So I always encourage people, have trust and faith that there are good people out there. And if you are a good person and you allow it to happen, it will happen. And don't think everyone is a wolf in sheep's clothes. You know, they could be among you. Everyone's in the business of making money. If you are in the business of making money and you're allowing other people to make money off of your product and your invention, in my case, there's so many different ways of doing Spirit Fingers that I don't have to license out my entire business. I can license out, in the new contract's case, to Windcraft. They are the exclusive manufacturer and distributor of licensed product.
Are they the ones for NCAA, NFL, NHL, MLB, and NBA?
Yes. So overnight, I went from Imperial, who had 85 licensed colleges, to, with Windcraft, I picked up 350 licensed colleges, 32 NFL teams, then the NBA, NHL, MLB. Their contacts at the stadiums, because they've been in business for 50 years and they are the longest licensee of the NFL. One of the things that I had to look at this time that I hadn't looked at in previous relationships was the foundation and the stability of the company. I was tired of being bought out and constantly, you know, what am I going to do with this product? Do I do it all myself? Do I find another partner to help facilitate these relationships with retailers and sales teams? So I really looked at Windcraft and said, you know, what's the tenor of the people here? When I went and visited their offices, which, by the way, they flew me up there and they picked me up from the airport. They were just first class from the get-go. I met people who had been with Wincraft for 15 years and 20 years and 25 years. And the CEO and the owner of Wincraft and his wife invited me over for wine into their house. And they took me out to dinner. And their CEO, again, this is like a $300 million company. Their CEO and their president and chairman of their board were taking me out like I was another $10 million company or something. And I wasn't. I'm an individual. I have a $2.5 million product line. But do I have a portfolio of this college and this successful venture and this success? No, I don't. They didn't treat me like that. They treated me like a smart and successful business owner. And they allowed me to talk to their employees and talk to their executives and hear what their idea was and what their marketing plan was going to be. And again, I just took a leap of faith, and this contract is another short contract, 3 pages long.
So you negotiated a 10% royalty?
10%, yep, I'm doing 10%.
$1 million minimum?
$1 million minimum.
This sounds like the motherload. I mean, are they going to push this?
Oh, yeah. This year, we're already doing a Target rollout at 1,400 stores. You'll see us in a plethora of stadiums. We're on shopnhl.com now.
How are sales going so far?
Well, we just entered the official contract. We started doing business in January, but our contract was official April 15th. So right now, I don't have a great number on sales and the success, but I would say they are very confident in the product. They have 65,000 pair in stock now. They have another 72,000 that they have on order, and they will arrive in the country in September. They have spent $100,000 on an embroidery machine that will allow them the domestic capabilities of embroidering. So again, our number has climbed up to 56 colors now. But those 56 colors, if it's a black and red glove, it can now be used for Chicago Bulls, Alabama, Phoenix Cardinals. They can stock 10,000 black and red. And when I mean black and red, black is the color of the gloves. Red is the contrast in the pom-poms. So it would be black and red pom-poms on a black glove.
For more interviews like this, go to hardtofindseminars.com. Have you had to date any infringers of your patent?
I have. Oriental Trading simply made pom-poms attached to a glove and offered it in their catalog.
How were you made aware of that?
A friend of mine called me and said, hey, I was just flipping through the magazine and I see your spear fingers in here. Is this one of your customers? And I said, actually, it's not. So I just had my attorneys type up a letter and sent it to them, and they disappeared.
Did you get them as a customer?
No, we didn't get them as a customer, no. But, I mean, we have partnerships now with Susan G. Komen. We produce a glove for them. We partnered with Coca-Cola, which is the number one brand in the world.
Tell me about the Coca-Cola deal.
It started out in 2011 as a promotional product for Coca-Cola at 5 colleges in the Southeast. And they bought, you know, maybe 2,500 pair total. And so if you went to that college and you bought 3 Coke products, like 16-ounce Cokes, you would get a pair of free Coca-Cola spirit fingers. It would be in the college colors, but it would have the script Coca-Cola logo across the hand instead of the college logo. Well, then in 2012, they upped that to 9 Tier 1 colleges in the Southeast, and they went from 2,500 pair to 15,000 pair. If you went for the month of November to select retailers on campus or around the campus and bought 3 Coca-Cola products, right then they hand it to you at the register.
Who got that deal?
They sell the product somewhere, called my office. And that's what I have realized also as the inventor of a product that has so many legs. You go from retail to high schools to stadiums to promotional to kids. And when you surround yourself, like I have, with so many people, there's just no way you can fail. I surrounded myself with the right distribution network and the right licensing people in terms of the sports licensing and the right sales reps and the right contacts that me as the inventor, I can still maintain the face of the brand and I can still go out and visit large customers and talk to young inventors or talk on the phone and kind of be the PR side of it, and everything is still getting done.
You're the woman behind Spirit Fingers, and that's fun.
It is. It is literally the American dream.
As the company grows, when you're doing, you know, 50, 100 million, your expertise and your value is going to go up as an entrepreneur.
As an entrepreneur, there's a realization, and it becomes a roadblock in your life if you don't really recognize it. As an entrepreneur, you love the chase of the business. You love the growth. You love the idea of growing a business. You love the big idea of a business. That's why you go into business. Obviously, you wouldn't go into business thinking, oh, this is a terrible idea and I'm going to fail, but I'm going to spend all my money anyways on a business. As an entrepreneur, you go into business thinking, oh, this is going to succeed and these are going to be my customers and I'm going to make a lot of money. I'm going to provide a lot of jobs. And as an entrepreneur, you actually transition from a big idea to an actual business owner if the business is successful. And that's a huge challenge that I have faced. I no longer can just be a big idea person because there's taxes that have to be paid. There's employees that have to be paid. There's still the aspect of a big idea because we're still in the foundation phase of our business. But now it's how do you figure out European distribution? How do you figure out Australian distribution? How do you figure out who to hire to get to that next level? It's a huge realization.
Can you share with the listeners how much money have you made with this business?
Collectively, I have probably made more than some people will make in their lives.
Have you made a million?
No, I haven't made a million yet, not collectively. Actually, I probably made $500,000.
Before taxes?
Before taxes, yeah.
What kind of patent were you awarded? A utility patent?
Yes, it's a utility. And I think the best description of a utility in a non-complex, non-lawyer jargon is it's how it's utilized. Because there were some balls attached to a glove. It was that cat's toy I mentioned in the beginning, but it was a cat's toy. This is a pom-pom attached to a glove that's used for fan apparel.
Different category.
Different category, different use of the actual glove than just keeping your hands warm.
So, what are some of the negatives you've learned about the product? Any reasons why people don't want to buy them? What challenges have you discovered with the actual product that you wish would go away or would not occur that you can overcome? Anything?
I would say right now is size. We get a lot of inquiries where children want them. And our one size fits most is really for about 15 and older. And we need a little bit more product diversification. We have a really cool rugby line that we've never launched, but it's in our little bag of tricks. We've got some that have some light sources at the end that, you know, kind of would add this splashing look to it. We've gotten requests for, like, Disney licensed Disney fingers with the different characters because children will keep these gloves on as opposed to any of their other gloves because they're a little fun. People want more licensing. They want sorority licensing. They want Disney licensing. They want to see more. They also want to see more than just the plain glove with the two-tone pom-poms. We have some rugby stripes, maybe some polka dots. If you want to put your name or your child's name, if your child plays football and his name is Jackson, I think they'd like to be able to customize it with just their name or their number.
Are you in ASI?
We are not, but Wincraft as a company is, and we are looking into allowing them to handle the ASI industry too. And again, that's that promotional industry. But as our contract stands right now, they're only allowed to manufacture, produce, and distribute licensed goods.
How about Walmart? Have you approached
Walmart's
them?
Walmart's out, especially right now with our colleges. Maybe once the NFL picks up some and the NHL, our customer base is really the NCAA at this point. That's our million-dollar product line. So you think of the shoppers, and I don't want to say that Walmart shoppers are not educated, but if I had to choose, and I did have to choose between Target and Walmart, I went with Target because I think it fits our customer base a little bit better. If you look at the brands that each store carries, NFL is a huge Walmart brand. NCAA, their fan zone, is huge at Target, that little fan zone aisle. Is there a future at Walmart? Probably. And I think as we expand our line into different types of spirit fingers, whether our pom-pom changes or our glove changes, or the design of our glove changes with our blanks and our rugby stripes, I think Walmart is an obvious place for us to go, but our margins have to be right, and we haven't fine-tuned that kind of stuff yet. And we don't want to kill our brand. We want to be seen at the stadiums. This is game day apparel. So we would rather be at the stadiums in and around the college town as opposed to a nationwide retailer. They have thousands of locations, but again, with us being a game day apparel, if we sell into Walmart, we could lose our major partnerships at the stadium level.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Sinoff's hardtofindseminars.com. All right, let's talk to a young woman who's entrepreneurial, maybe like you were, who wants to patent a product and get into the entrepreneurial lifestyle, and she has three kids and she has a husband. What, in hindsight, would you tell her as far as giving advice before she starts her path to what you've been doing over the last multiple years?
Well, first, I tell all young entrepreneurs to keep their expenses absolutely minimal. And I say, don't make any permanent decisions in your 20s. Don't buy a house. I even say don't get married, but that would have really messed up my situation. Don't buy an existing business unless you know it's going to work. You always have to wonder, why is someone getting out of business? Why is it for sale? Because launching any new business requires a lot of money and no return. You know, when you look at someone as a partner, you have to make sure that as an entrepreneur that they don't squash your ideas and that they really believe in themselves enough to believe in you. As an entrepreneur, I had relationships in the past where I would tell them my crazy ideas, and a lot of times they didn't support them. Almost made me feel bad for having these crazy ideas. So as a young woman, and what is still in the business world, pretty much still a man's world, you need a man who is confident in himself and confident in your relationship and secure enough that they believe in your ideas, even though you might be female. They believe in your ability to make bold decisions and know that you're not going to make an emotional decision. I think in this business or as an entrepreneur or even as a female, I have to even fine-tune it down to that. A lot of times you'll hear someone say, stop being so emotional. But as a man, it would be like, oh, he's in a bad mood today. But it's always about us being emotional. So, again, as a young entrepreneur, find the right partner if you're going to have a partner. If you're not, stay at home with your parents. Sink all of your money into building a business rather than building debt. Rather than buying a fancy car, take that same monthly payment that you'd be paying and put it in a savings account and start a grass-cutting business. Anyone, for the most part, can make about $25,000 a year working for themselves. In this day and age, in the dot-com business, you can pretty much start a website for $10 and build it yourself and sell some stuff on it and make $25,000, maybe $50,000. So I just say go for it. I think it's much better to create your own path than to allow people to tell you what you do on a day-to-day basis.
Where do you see Spirit Fingers 5 years from now?
I hope it's in every stadium. I hope you can walk to a Major League Baseball game and get it, or an NFL game, or an NCAA game. And it's just as iconic as a baseball cap, or the number one finger, the foam finger, or even the pom-pom. I'd like to see some international expansion. I think soccer is huge, and I think rugby over in other countries. There's the European nations and Russia, and we have Olympic. I mean, there's just so much growth. So I would just love to see the growth continue and not see the roadblocks that could have prevented us from getting to where we are today prevent us from getting where I'd like to see it in 5 years from now.
I'm sure you've looked into the pom-pom business. Was the pom-pom originally a patented product?
The company Wincraft, that is now my new partnership, they started their company and all they sold was pom-poms.
Really?
That's it. And when the owner, Dick Pope, bought Wincraft, they made pom-poms out of tissue paper material. Now, you know, you've got vinyl, you've got shimmery kind, you've got sparkly kind, you've got little pom-poms, big pom-poms, ruder pom-poms. And that's really what they told me in terms of my business. I said, you know, guys, I think we've got a shelf life here. And they said, no. Wincraft doesn't get into anything with a shelf life. We get into things that are long-term. We wouldn't get into a fad. We think this has a lot of legs. We think it's here to stay. We think it's had a nice growth cycle. We think there's still a lot of growth in the product line, and we don't foresee anything in the next 20 years preventing it from still being for sale to anyone.
How long is your contract with them?
It's still 2016, but it's renewable within 6 months of that April 16th, 2016. But I don't foresee it ever being available for a licensing contract in that channel of distribution as long as I can see it.
Wincraft, they have the licensing with all the major sports franchises, but you're free to grow your business and you can do anything you want. It's still yours.
And that's what I do, and that's where I'm regrouping. I'm actually taking some time off from the day-to-day operations, and I'm going to do free internships with some major companies who have become friends of mine now, and they happen to be the presidents or CEOs or founders of those companies. And they're, you know, $100 million, $300 million, and $500 million. These are the three that I've picked. One's e-commerce. One is the wholesale manufacturing and distribution, and one is in the sports licensing, which happens to be Wincraft. And I'm just going to spend a few weeks and see how they do it, why they do it this way, why that's their channel of business. Look at all of my options as the inventor of Spirit Fingers and still the owner, founder, and CEO, and figure out, where do we go now? What do we do now? Do we focus on our website sales? Because I have retained the right to sell to consumers online every Spirit Finger available.
Are you doing it now?
I am doing that until June 15th. We're actually shutting down our e-commerce because, again, I was only required to carry 56 colors and 85 colleges because that's all I had access to. Now I have 56 colors, 350 colleges, 32 NFL teams, NHL teams, MLB teams, NBA teams. We need to just relaunch. We need to spend the money on redoing our website, buy all of the inventory from Wincraft that they have now afforded us. We still have factory relations. Wincraft does, in fact, use our approved factories. And then we'd like to have some things that are special to our company website only, whether it be colors or, like I've mentioned before, Disney fingers or sorority spirit fingers. So, again, another roadblock. I see it almost as a maze. We haven't reached the finish line of spirit fingers, but we've hit a roadblock and we need to just kind of come back and turn around and find out where the next... Yeah, and between you and I, or between you and I and the listeners, as the inventor, you always think about what legacy am I going to leave? Do you want to leave a legacy of the inventor and the PR and the front end and the face? One of the challenges that I face is I have this whole bag of ideas, whether it be different sizes or different colors or different licensing opportunities with sororities and Disney's or different patterns on the gloves with rugby and polka dot or customized. I can't require another company to do that for me. So at some point, I really have to look at my big idea, and Wincraft as a sports licensed business, that should be an addition to ours. But I think we need to make sure that we can create our own legacy. And when people think of Spirit Fingers, they think of our company and not just the name of the product.
Well, I'm sure you are well on your way. I'm sure you're going to do it. Really enjoy this. I think this has been a great interview.
I really enjoyed it. It's been a long time, if ever, probably never, that anyone has really asked me from beginning to current.
I know. Well, I appreciate it. Maybe in 2-3 years, when you're in all the major national sports franchises and you're a real big shot, you got to promise me to make time for me and let me interview you, and we'll do it before or after. How about that?
Yeah, so that would be great.
For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.